And I'm going to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 1:32 p.m. on Wednesday, February 12th, 2020. Present today, we've got Representative Knopp, Representative LeBon, I saw, there he is back there. Representative LeBon, Representative Tilton, Representative Carpenter, Vice Chair Ortiz, Co-Chair Johnston, Representative Sullivan Leonard, Representative Merrick, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. And do we have anybody in the audience? I don't see any legislators. Just a reminder, if folks could please mute their cell phones. Today we will hear three budget overview presentations, starting with Military and Veterans Affairs, then Labor and Workforce Development, and then finally Department of Natural Resources. My hope is to spend no more than about 40 minutes on each of the presentations. That'll take us to about 2 hours. To start the first presentation, I'd like to invite up to the table Colonel Torrance Sachs, Commissioner for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs.
He's been promoted twice.
This is true, yes. Stephanie Richard, the Administrative Services Director. Thank you for both being here. And I just saw the Colonel up in Nome, I think, in December. So good to see you again.
Good to see you again.
And with that, if you could put yourselves on the record.
Sure. Major General Torrance Sachs, Commissioner DMVA and Adjutant General for Alaska.
Stephanie Richard, Administrative Services Director.
And Stephanie, why don't you lead off of this and we'll get into it.
Thank you. We're going to start with this first slide that we're going to start with shows operating budget comparison between our fiscal year 19 management plan and the fiscal year 21 governor's request. And what you will see is there is an increase in unrestricted general funds and designated general funds, and that is due to the transfer of the Alaska Land Mobile Radio and State of Alaska Telecommunications Systems components to our department. We do have some significant changes that we'll be highlighting in future slides, but those do include the transfer of the ALMR and SATS components, reduction of matching funds due to business process realignment and efficiencies in our Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, as well as a reduction in authority due to divestiture process in our armories, and a reduction in authority due to janitorial contract savings. The next slide shows a breakdown by fund sort, by fund category. And again, we will see here an increase in the general fund due to the ALMR and SATS transfer. There's also a reduction in other funds. That is essentially a technical cleanup. We went through and aligned our authority, our interagency receipt authority, with our anticipated revenue collection. So if there's no questions on the figures, we'll head into our presentation.
Sure. As far as the overarching mission for DMVA, it really is to protect and defend Alaska. We have military forces here in the state and certainly deploying on a regular basis. So Homeland Security and Defense, emergency preparedness, and also we have a school, the Youth Academy, and that training education we continue on a regular basis. We have an Office of Veterans Affairs and, of course, our admin services. So as far as overall numbers, we have about 4,200, about 200 on the state side, and about 4,000 military. A little bit more on the Air Force side than Army, but by and large, the forces between the 4,200 are on the military side. As far as the Alaska Land Mobile Radio, this is something that is being transferred over to our department, and there is a military nexus. There are three portions of it: Anchorage, the DOD, and also State of Alaska. Definitely on the military side, this is something that we would use in an emergency, but to be clear, we are certainly not the only user. This would be DPS, this would be any part of the state that would require emergency communication in that time when you really do need it. So I just want to go through a few numbers, but the way to look at it, ALMR is the radio, and SATS, that's the telephone line. Stephanie?
Okay. So with that transfer of the Alaska land mobile radio component, that is transferring $2.3 million in general funds, $60,000 in general fund program receipts, which is to allow for collection of fees for the service, and federal receipt authority of $1.9 million. And as Commissioner Sachs stated, this function does align with DMVA's mission to provide homeland security and defense and emergency response.
Representative Johnston.
Yes, thank you. And this was originally in the Department of Administration. And it's my understanding that we need to upgrade this system, and DOD is waiting to see what the state is going to be doing. My question to you is, do you feel you're the right department to have this and to be responsible for the system?
Through the chair, I think we are definitely adequate to do it. And as far as the nexus with the military, that part in particular, I think that makes us a very strong department. I have regular communication with General Boussier. He's the Alaska Command Commander. And he and I have talked about this as well. Because there is the military nexus, because we have Homeland Security, and for example, during the earthquake, we were one of the agencies that did need this communication. I do think this is a good place to have it.
Follow-up? And and I assume, and I'm sure that you'll be working with DPS and also Municipality of Anchorage as far as coordinating all of this.
Through the chair, I've already had extensive conversations with DPS, and they've done a lot of work in the background. They have given that to me as far as their concerns. I even talked to them yesterday, and I'll just repeat what I told them yesterday, hand in hand with DPS going forward. Concerns they have, I want them to be addressed through our department.
Thank you.
Further questions? Seeing none, please continue.
And as mentioned, as far as the SATs is concerned, those are the repeaters. So to use the analogy of the telephone and the telephone line, this would be the telephone line. And this would be the part that would need to be upgraded.
With the transfer of SATs, the satellite infrastructure, there is a transfer of $4.7 million in general fund, $90,000 in program receipts, and 24 permanent full-time PCNs.
And before we move on, just want to mention we've already reached out to the 24 people and really taking them under our wing as far as the department. As far as the Alaska State Defense Force, those are the members of the state militia that are always in state status. They would deploy only within the state unless it was a very extreme situation. We did have a few that deployed to Puerto Rico, for example, a few years ago for their crisis. But they do fall underneath the department. What we're looking to do here is focus on efficiencies. So Alcantara in particular, that's where we want the equipment to be stored. And there is money available, roughly $30,000. That's the norm for the State Defense Force, and I have that within my commissioner's fund. So we're just really resetting back to a norm and looking for those efficiencies.
Representative Carpenter.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question regarding the two transfers of the SATs and the LMR. Does that change at all the federal mission? Are you going to seek additional bodies or mission sets from the federal government in regards to that, those capabilities being required from the state level?
Through the chair, that should not change anything. Just the three entities, DOD, Anchorage, and State of Alaska.
Thank you.
Please continue.
As far as efficiencies going forward, as far as an administrative assistant, this is one position that would be going away without naming this individual. They have been notified, and it is one PCN. And the National Guard can certainly take up this duty as well, as far as picking up mail and other admin duties. This is a big one for Homeland Security. As far as the $400,000, this is something we looked at very closely. What we are doing is taking from a UGF and going over to federal funding. There is no operational limitation here. We've spent a lot of time researching grant by grant, capability by capability. And what we're talking about here, the only true change as far as the scope is travel, and only travel for admin purposes. So for example, if someone needed to come to Juneau for this meeting, under the current construct, they could. In the future, they would have to call in. So this is only an admin change. So things that are not going to be impacted, we have an after-hours call center in our state emergency operations center that keeps going. Amber Alert, no change there as well. River Watch, and also fleet management for our vehicles. So a lot of good data went into this to go from state funding to federal. Here's a positive news story as far as divestiture. We had previously 83 armories within the state, and we are working quickly to get down to 18. Now, the process to give back the armories to a given entity does vary, but by and large, we have to go through the Corps of Engineers. They do an environmental study, and then based on who owns the land, that's how it's given back. In simplified form, that really is the process. So we are very aware that communities want these back quickly, and we are working towards that goal. But I just want to give a thumbnail sketch. That's the number, 83 going down to 18. And if you look at the slide, we have a big block on the completed. We have some ready to divest, and the 18 that we're going to retain. And by and large, those are in the bigger areas within the state.
And Major General, my apologies. I've got various papers here that say Colonel, and so I just want to make sure Major General, I do have a question on that. The process that you're talking about as to go through the Army Corps of Engineers, is that typically, would you say, 12-month process, or are we looking longer, shorter?
It typically is a longer process, and we like to speak in terms of years because it's outside of our control by and large. But what I've tasked my folks to do is to focus on the ones that are coming up, and to push it forward with the Corps of Engineers. So a lot of times the squeaky wheel does get the grease, and I've been contacted at just about every event I go to. Someone in the communities, they're looking for the armory to come back, and as best as I can give an estimate on that armory, my folks are contacting them to give them that accurate estimate.
Does that also have to go through Department of Administration and also DOT public facilities, or is it just you and the Corps?
It mainly is through the Corps, but it does depend on a case-by-case basis. If the land is federal, it's one path. If it's just state, it's another. If it's native, it's another. So it does vary based on the individual armory.
Any further questions? Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, excuse my naivete, but I'm not familiar that there's so many armories around the state and a lot in rural villages. What's the primary function of the armories in some of these places, like St. Mary's, for example, or something like that? Are you storing arms? Is it?
Through the chair, I was out and I've seen a few of them, and again, it really does vary because we used to have guardsmen, Army Guard in particular, that were out at these locales. About 15 or 20 years ago, we did retract and bring most of the guardsmen back to Anchorage and Fairbanks, and so quite literally, many of these armories are vacant, and these are the ones in particular we'd like to give back as soon as possible. I've been out in some of the small villages, and this is their number one issue. They want to have access to the armory. It's a place of gathering. It's typically a good structure. So we're working quickly to get this back. Now, you see a relatively small dollar amount, $50,000. It's really the future gains that are going to be gleaned by giving these back.
Follow-up.
So historically, these were used for where guardsmen were stationed or deployed, I guess, and that mission has changed, or that function has changed, and now they're vacant buildings that are currently unavailable to the communities, and this would allow them to, you'd basically be giving them to the community, and they can use them for space that they would need.
Through the chair, that would be an accurate assessment, but again, it does vary based on who owns the land. But what I'm trying to do with rural operations is I want to establish hubs at some of the bigger armories.
Right.
And I do want to put guardsmen back in this area of Alaska.
Okay.
So we're not contracting completely. We're trying to reverse the trend a bit and get people to sign up and join accordingly.
Okay. Thank
but
you.
The 83, that's too many based on current force structure.
Thanks.
And just to add to that, I've got a couple of these facilities, these buildings in my district, and they're very, very small, really small, and usually totally abandoned, no lights, no electricity, no heats, no water, and haven't been used for many years. But the community is more than happy to take them. They can have youth programs in there. They can make it a place where, you know, maybe elders want to meet and whatnot. So I think it's you know, a win-win situation in this. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Will this movement to divest from these different armories throughout rural Alaska will have any impact at all on a person's ability to serve in the Guard in relationship to if you live in rural areas, or will that have any impact whatsoever? Say a person wants to serve in the Guard in Akiak, will that have any impact on their ability to do that?
We are trying to make it very easy for people to join. And so, for example, we're going to start up the milk run again to go to the bigger hubs within the state. So what I'm doing is not consolidating to Anchorage, but consolidating to the rural hubs. So Nome, Bethel, Galena, for example. And if they're in a nearby village, if they can drill at those places, that would be the goal. And just anecdotally, some of the recruiting and retention information we've had over the past several months as we've gone out, we now have literally hundreds of people in Western Alaska who were interested in joining, and that's an excitement we haven't seen for years.
And what was it that prompted that increased excitement?
I think it's getting out there and just making sure they understand that we are part of you as Alaskans, and we invite you to become part of us. We have recruiters. We're putting additional recruiters in that area of Alaska and going and having events, one with me but also the team, to say that we'd like you to join. And that's something that hasn't happened in a while.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any further questions? Seeing none, please continue.
Next thing is janitorial contract savings. And we're not looking to get rid of the entire contract, but just to have the Guard in particular step up and do more of the cleaning ourselves. So more to follow on the numbers.
Yes. This proposal for the reduction of authority for janitorial contract savings, it's a general fund savings of $123,000 and federal receipt authority of $378,000. How we came to those figures was we really drilled down on our prior year expenditures on janitorial contracts, and what we wanted to do was similar to what the state of Alaska did several years ago and focus on cleaning of common areas instead of the entire areas, reducing the frequency of the visits. And so we looked at what we spent last fiscal year, and we targeted a 50% reduction. So that's where these figures came from. So this is our, particularly with general funds, our targeted figure. So what is going to happen if this proposal goes forward is our procurement team will go out, cancel the current contracts, resolicit those, put those bids back out. And so we don't know which facility those savings will come from. It will depend on the bid response. But we know what our target is, and that's the plan for that. So the target, as Commissioner Sachs said, looking at similar to what the state did and just finding efficiencies and reductions.
And next, as far as authority to align with just anticipated expenditures, on the Air Guard side, we have the ability to be more efficient. That's what we're looking to do, and this really is excess. So no operational impact. Subject to your questions.
Any questions of the committee? Representative Sullivan Leonard.
Thank you, through the chair. As I read through the mission and see some of the responsibilities and duties held under the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, one area that I always like to ask questions on is with regard to our youth military academy. Would you mind giving us an update on how that's working, how the success is coming through for the youth that go through these programs? Mm-hmm. Or are you seeing challenges that maybe just aren't on paper here, but that you'd like to highlight for the committee?
Through the chair, just on a personal note, my wife has sponsored two of the cadets over the past couple years, and to see the life-changing event that occurs in a short amount of time, I was a fan way before I took this position. So I would say the state of the academy is healthy, and in particular, one thing that we have changed up, it's a youth academy under DMVA, but we have a lot of guardsmen that could help. And so now we're sending over guardsmen in much larger numbers to help out with mentoring, with physical training, So they're getting help on levels perhaps that they did not, at least at the same degree, same level before. I have regular meetings with the staff, and morale does seem high. What I've asked them to do is have authority and responsibility at the same level. If you have responsibility for something, I want you to have the authority for it, not just at the director level, but all the way down to the trainers that meet daily with the cadets. I've got a good communication relationship with the staff there, and I go over on a regular basis, so I think the morale is pretty high.
Fantastic. Just for a quick follow-up.
Follow-up?
Well, thank you. I'm a big fan of the program as well. Are you seeing an increase in youth coming into the program, or a decrease at all, or is it pretty steady?
Through the chair, the numbers are pretty steady, around 135 to 150. And that really is healthy, though, because I've asked the staff what the right number is, and that's about the target that we're looking for. We don't want so many that we can't address students on an individual basis. Another thing we've changed up is now the healthcare is much more robust there. And I've gone over and I've talked to the staff, incredibly dedicated as to what they want to do for the kids. They are completely vested in taking care of them, and it really is inspiring.
Going back to slide number two, did you, if you back out the ALMR transfer, is your FY 20 to 21, would that be an increase or a decrease if you back out ALMR?
Sure. Chair Foster, if we did not include the transfer of ALMR and SATs, there would be a decrease. In UGF.
And how much again was that?
It was about, 500, it was 400,000 UGF in the Homeland Security Division, and for the janitorial service, I want to say it was like 123,000. I'm sorry, I don't have the grand total.
Okay.
123,000 for the janitorial, mm-hmm. the 10,000 reduction in the Office of the Commissioner mm-hmm. for the Alaska State Defense Force stipend, and I think there was $3,000 and some change for the administrative assistant position. Okay. That was primarily funded with federal funds.
So overall, your budget is down UGF when ALMR is backed out. My other comment, and then I think Representative Ortiz has a question. Just want to thank Major General Sachs for coming out to Nome and talking a little bit about maybe getting some folks out into the hubs, and it's not going to require state money at this point, and I know it's very preliminary, but it looks like it would be federal funds that are coming into the state, and so you could increase the presence. So I just wanted to appreciate that. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going back to slide 5 and 6 and to the topic of the ALMR transfer as well as the Alaska Telecommunications System transfer, both through the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs. Sorry if I missed it. What was the impetus for this transfer? Can you tell me about that? Was it like maybe you folks being better able to take advantage of federal funds? I just kind of know what was the impetus to make the transfer.
We do have the connection to the military, a very close association with our active duty counterparts, Alaska Command in particular, General Boussier, the current commander, and we also have Homeland Security. So in the event of a big disaster, if it really got bad, we would establish a dual status commander, and that person would be in charge of both state and federal forces. So the ultimate emergency, it would fall on our department, and the communication does make sense to have it within our department because of that reason.
Thank you.
Representative LeBon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can't miss the opportunity of having General Sachs here to ask him if he cares to maybe provide a little bit of an update on the 168th Air Refueling Wing and at Eielson Air Force. How's that mission coming, and what's the future look like?
Through the chair, happy to do that. And former wing commander up in Eielson, the KC-135s, they continue to shine. And the nearest tail, the newest airplane, is a 1963. And I always use the analogy, what would it be like if you were driving a 1963 car? So we are working with active duty. Should Pacific Air Forces decide to put the new tanker at Eielson, that's called the KC-46, we are very open to an association, even now, on our current airplanes, and certainly open to an association should they bring the KC-46. The end strength is up at the unit. We're hovering around the high 80s, which is the best it's been in a long time, and the retention rate up there is about 97%. So also underneath the wing is Clear Air Force Station, And if you haven't heard, there's a new service coming, the United States Space Force. We're one of 8 states that has a space mission at CLEAR, and so that mission will likely be going to the Space National Guard. And that is going to be connected directly into Fort Greely. So spotter-sniper relationship for a relatively small wing, it's healthy and moving forward. And there's just so many things happening right now within the interior on the military side. It is an exciting time to be part of the wing.
Follow-up?
As a follow-up to that, does the arrival of the F-35s help with the air refueling mission and maybe with getting those KC-46s? Is there a connection to the two?
Through the chair, I think there is. Again, it's not my call. It would be PACAF or Pacific Air Forces. But there is a need for refueling now. It's exciting because we're going to have more fifth-gen fighters than any place on the planet. But we have to ask the question and be able to address how are we going to refuel the new aircraft coming in.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Does the new Space Force impact the Army Guard's current mission at Greeley?
Through the chair, that is a valid and good question because about 6 months ago it did. Fort Greeley was going to be transferring over to the Space Force. As of today, they are not. However, this morning there was a change that was not anticipated. About 100 Army Guardsmen are going to transfer over to the Space Force. So more to follow. Right now the answer is no, but I'm watching it very carefully.
Thank you.
Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is the Space Force its own separate branch, or is it a sub of another branch?
Through the chair, it is its own separate branch, but it's still evolving. The best analogy I can give is when the Air Force evolved out of the Army. So very small number now. It's going to be a small force, but I believe as it expands in mission, it's going to expand in numbers.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I don't see any further questions. Any final comments?
We appreciate your time, and thanks for hearing us here today.
Thank you very much. Thanks. And so next we've got the Labor and Workforce Development Budget Overview, and I'd like to invite up a familiar face, Kathy Munoz, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, as well as Hannah Lager, I think, is that right? Lager, the Administrative Services Director. And thank you both for being here. Great to see you, Kathy. And if there's some back and forth, if maybe if you could just identify yourselves to help with the transcription later. If you could go ahead and put yourselves on the record and start with your presentation.
Thank you, Chair Foster and Co-Chair Johnston, members of the committee. It's wonderful to be here to present the good work of the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development. I'm Kathy Munoz, Deputy Commissioner for the Department. It's wonderful to be here and to see you today. On behalf of the Commissioner, I'm also sending her best regards and greetings. She is currently in Washington, D.C., attending national meetings of the National Association of Workforce Development or Workforce Agencies. She was recently appointed National Chair of the Workforce Development Committee, which has been a great opportunity for our organization in interacting with other states on the best practices around workforce development. Today with me, I have in the audience Bill Endicott, Division Operations Manager in Management Services, Lisa Flores, our Budget Manager, Dwayne Mays, Director of Vocational Rehabilitation, and Gray Mitchell, Director of the Workers' Compensation, Labor Standards and Safety Divisions, and also Administrative Services Director Hannah Lager. Today we're going to give you an overview of our divisions and programs, and then a summary of the 2021 budget proposals from the adjusted base. So to start off with, the mission of the department is to provide safe and legal working conditions and to advance opportunities for employment. We do this through core services. The primary core services are to protect Alaskan workers. We do this through our ACOSH, Alaska Occupational Safety and Health Organization, the workforce development component, and income replacement. Our proposed FY 2021 budget totals $150.5 million, Of that, the largest portion, 62%, is work dedicated to workforce development. The agency receives a great deal of federal money that comes through pass-through money that is shared with training providers around the state. It's also provided to the job centers, the one-stop job centers, and money goes out for training to the individual Alaskans that are able to access those services. So in looking at our organization, we categorized four components and put the divisions that work within those components together for this presentation. In the first component, protecting workers, we have the Alaska Labor Relations Agency, the Workers' Compensation Division, and the Labor Standards and Safety Division. In the blue component, the workforce development, we have the Alaska Workforce Investment Board. This is our statewide workforce investment board. It's the only board of its kind in Alaska. Many states have multiple workforce development boards. I think fortunately we have one board that can really coordinate and work with the training providers very effectively. We have representatives on the AWIB from K-12 public education, the university, training programs, private and public, industry, and the state of Alaska. Also in that component is the Division of Employment and Training Services, Vocational Rehabilitation, and the Alaska Vocational Technical Center in Seward. AvTech was just named in the top 10% for colleges, universities, and training programs around the country for return on investment. We're very proud of this designation. It was awarded by Georgetown University's Center on Education and the Workforce, and it ranked AvTech number 41 out of 4,500 schools and universities across the country. So that we were very proud of that. In the green category, income replacement, we have the Unemployment Insurance Program and Disability Determinations. And then finally, in our leadership component, we have the Commissioner's Office, Management Services, Data Processing, Labor Market Information, and Leasing. In the Labor Market Information category, that's the Research and Analysis Division, the publisher of the popular Trends magazine, and also the producer of up-to-date economic data, job data. And if you haven't been to our website, I encourage you to go to the Department of Labor's website. It's a wealth of information on economic data. Okay. So if we look at the broad priorities of the department, the main priorities, I would say that, you know, number one priority is promoting a culture of excellence in customer service. We pride ourselves on being very responsive to the public. This open for business philosophy permeates throughout the work of the department. There are 732 employees at the Department of Labor. 662 are full-time, 48 are part-time, mostly seasonal unemployment insurance employees, and 22 temporary. Most of the temporary positions are student interns. The commissioner has placed a priority on bringing in high school and college interns into the department, and it has been very successful. As I said, we're very proud of promoting a culture of business-friendly customer service. In 2019, we increased our consultation efforts in the ACOSH, the Alaska Occupational Safety and Hazard Division, through a more cooperative strategy with the regulated community. Also in 2019, we completed 392 OSHA enforcement inspections of work sites to ensure safe working conditions. And these efforts resulted in the lowest workplace lost time injury since 2012. We also place a high priority on preparing Alaskans for jobs in their community. One of the commissioner's priorities is ensuring that Alaskans know about the many jobs, the many opportunities and services through the Department of Labor, including training, job preparation, counseling, adaptive technology for employment for the disabled, and much more. And then we also focus very much on the efficient and effective delivery of services. We are working to build collaboration between the divisions. We're working currently to merge two of our divisions, the Workers' Compensation Division with the Labor Standards and Safety Division. And then we're also working with other departments to collaborate and to coordinate where we can better serve Alaskans. And two examples of that are with the At-Risk Youth Initiative. We're working with the Department of Health and Social Services to collaborate on employment, housing, and training opportunities for youth that are transitioning out of foster care and also youth that are transitioning out of high school. The other project that we're very proud of is the Youth Homelessness Demonstration Project. This was a cooperative effort with the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation where we successfully sought and received a perpetual grant of $1.65 million to combat youth homelessness in Alaska. And finally, we are working with other states. We're coordinating with other states where we can. And as I said earlier, the commissioners work with the National Association of State Workforce Agencies is an example of that. And her recent appointment to the Employment and Training Committee. So we're very excited to work with you to promote opportunities for Alaskans, to get Alaskans trained and connected to the opportunities in this economy. And we look forward to continuing to develop a locally grown workforce. And with that, I will turn it over to Administrative Director Hannah to give you a walkthrough of the budget. Thank you.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Hannah Lager. I am the Administrative Services Director for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. We're going to go ahead and start on slide 5 and dive right into the numbers. This chart at the top of this slide shows a 3-year look back at our department's budget. At this scale, the 3 bars don't look like there's a lot of change between them. That's because so much of our budget is federal, so it kind of squishes the other bars down. The yellow bar, of course, is federal on there. That's the largest portion at 50%, followed by the orange bar, which is designated general funds. It's about 25% of our budget. There's 12% other funds in gray, and then the little blue bar at the bottom is our unrestricted general funds, which is about 13%. And we are going to go through more of what goes into each of those fund categories on the next slide. Before we leave this slide, I want to look at that blue line in the table at the bottom. So that's our unrestricted general fund. So you can see that from 19 to 20, we had a little uptick. That was $250,000 that went into our labor market information component for one-time 2020 census outreach work. So going forward to the FY 2021 column, you can see that our request is just $18.6 million. So that's a drop of $2.1 million overall. That's that $2,091,200 in the 21 column. That's a 10% reduction from FY 2019. And I just want to walk through in the kind of big categories what's included in that number, although we are going to go through the details on later slides. So of that $2.1 million, $1.4 million is going to be a net zero fund change between unrestricted general funds and designated general funds. And that's related to correction of the categorization of certified payroll fees. It's just kind of an accounting cleanup. $250,000 of that is the difference in that one-time census item coming back out because we only needed that for 1 year. And so that leaves about $450,000 worth of general fund reductions to the core functions of our agency. And so we are going to go through all of those details. Thank you. Okay. Slide 6 is a little bit crowded, but that's because we have a whole lot of funding sources. It does provide a comprehensive look at those. So looking first at the table at the top of the slide, you can see we don't have any formula programs in the Department of Labor. The TVEP funding is kind of like a formula program, but it's not technically categorized as such. So our total operating budget is that non-formula line of $150 million. The next line down is an intricacy that I just want to touch on because it is such a large chunk of our budget, and that's duplicated funding. We haven't gotten very deep into this over the last couple of years, but this is really where we count our money twice in the budget. So it's where one section of the state pays another section of the state for services provided. For labor, that's about 10% of our budget. That is interagency receipts and CIP receipts. That's money spent from previously appropriated capital projects in our budget. So this is, for example, how part of our management services gets paid for. The administration for the department gets paid by other sections of our department, so we count it twice. If we exclude that, our budget is only about $135 million, so it's fairly small in the grand scheme of things. At the bottom of the slide, we can see that we have a variety of different funding sources, many in the designated general fund category. A lot of those are funds that are specified for specific payments or specific programs. On to slide 7. We will go through each individual item changed from adjusted base. I'm going to go fairly briskly through this since I know we're on a little bit of a time schedule, but I'm happy to answer any questions that come up. So item number 1 on this slide is reducing general funds in our commissioner's office. In previous years, we used these for legal expenses that are not expected to occur. There was a very specific litigation that was going on that's no longer occurring. Item number 2 is eliminating a position in our Anchorage procurement office. We're going to streamline things a little bit, not do reception in that office anymore, and operate a little bit more efficiently. Item number 3 is reducing general funds in our data processing section. This will increase their reliance on federal funds, making people pay for their own projects through either their federal awards or through their other funding sources. Item number 4, we see a small increment for research and analysis to benefit the Mental Health Trust and their beneficiaries. Item number 5 in our labor market information section is eliminating our online training clearinghouse. This is a tool that was, it's very cool. It probably was very useful to the public 10 years ago. Now most of this information can be found through a Google search, so we're not going to do that. It's not statutorily required. Item number 6 is consolidating 2 administrative positions into 1 in our Juneau Labor Market Information Office. This is the same concept. We're looking at where we can do things more efficiently and with fewer staff. Oops, sorry. I need to flip my page, not your page. Item number 7 is a little bit of a tricky one that I just want to spend a little bit more time on. So last year, HB 79 was passed, which phased out the second injury fund for the department. We put forward a fiscal note for that that would have gradually reduced our authority from the second injury fund over a period of years until it got down to nothing. We've taken another look at that. We've recognized that most of the payments coming out of that second injury fund are for total disability, so they're lifetime payments coming out. So we can't really reduce our authority. We're going to need to continue the authority to make those payments until the fund is out of money. So this is half of this transaction. The other half of this transaction, it's a minus 400,000, lives before adjusted base. So it's not on this slide, but it is in your budget book. So they net out to zero, that it really is just demonstrating what we would have done if the fiscal note was adopted, but we recognize that we can't actually move forward that way. And item number 8 is the what I mentioned earlier, the correcting the categorization of certified payroll fees. We collect these for years. We've collected them and put them into the general fund, and then we spent from the general fund. But we've reviewed the statute. It calls them fees. They meet the definition of program receipts under the program receipt statute, and so we're just switching them over to more accurately reflect our budget. Moving on to slide 8, item 9. We are adjusting our administrative and investigative positions in our Fairbanks office for wage and hour administration. We've had an office assistant in that office that's been vacant for more than a year now, and so we're going to use some of our other staff in that area to help support the administrative needs of that section and delete the office assistant. We're also reclassifying a wage and hour technician, or an investigator, excuse me, to a wage and hour technician, which will result in some changes in our legal fees in that office. Item number 10 is a very minor adjustment. This component only has $3,000 worth of unrestricted general funds left. Anecdotally, it probably costs us more than $3,000 to administer those structures and track them and budget for them every year. So we're just going to clear that out, and we're not going to have that tiny little bit left there. Item number 11, in our unemployment insurance component, we are again cleaning up positions that we don't need. These have been vacant for very nearly 2 years, and so we want to make sure that we're accurately reflecting our needs in the budget. So we're deleting those two and the federal authority associated with them. Item number 12, in our vocational rehabilitation component, we closed our office in Kodiak effective December 31st of 2019. So we are deleting the two positions and authority associated with those in the 21 budget to clean that up. And then items 13 and 14 kind of go together for the Alaska Vocational Technical Center. They really are focusing on making sure that student fees that they charge support themselves for student consumables, things like gas supplies for the welding, with their welding shops, things like that. They also are putting forward a regulatory package that will have a 4% tuition increase in it. We're making sure to keep them very affordable and competitive, but also making sure that students cover a little bit more of their costs. Likewise, item 14, they're focusing more on leveraging contractual training opportunities to help support some of their program operations. And then item number 15 is AVTEC continuing to evaluate their programs. They've looked, as one of their instructors was retiring, they looked at their programs that they offered and realized that with a little bit of a calendar shift, they could have one instructor teach two programs. And so they're doing that, and as a result, deleting positions. Moving on to slide 9. I know we're talking about... Oh.
I'm sorry, we've got a question, Representative Johnston.
Yes, thank you, through the chair. Can we go back to the step? What's the current formula for that step funding right now? Do you know?
Step funding is it's financed through the portion of the employee tax, the employment security tax. 0.5% of wages goes into is taken out of the employee's pay. And for STEP, it's 0.10 of that, 0.10 of that amount, or approximately $8 million a year.
And do we know the last time that was adjusted?
I'm not sure of that. We can hand it.
Representative Johnston, I'm sure we could follow up as far as the last time that the STEP percentage was adjusted.
Okay. I've heard some interest in adjusting it, so I thank you.
Please continue.
Great, thank you. On slide 9, this, you know, we're talking about mostly the operating budget today, but we wanted to make sure that you guys had a full picture of what our budget request is this year, so we've included this in here for our 2021 capital budget project for the Business Enterprise Program in Vocational Rehabilitation. On to slide 10, we've provided, this is informational, just an update on more significant items that happened in our budget last year in case there's any questions related to that. And then on to slide 11 is our technical vocational education program funding history. So this shows from 17 to our 2021 request that's before you. You'll notice that FY 2021 is the same as FY 2020 for now. We know that reauthorization of this program needs to happen. I know that there is a bill in progress to do that at this point. And the program currently sunsets June 30th of 2020.
Are there any questions from the committee? Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So it's not in these slides, but I've looked at this budget and budget subcommittees, and there's just one particular line item I'm just not quite understanding, so I'm going to ask you about it, and I'll apologize to the rest of you who haven't seen this yet. But so first my question will be, can you explain the what used to be the business partnership line? What did that program do, and what was it intended to do, business partnership?
Sure. Do you want to take the question? The business partnership is through the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation. It's to ensure priority for disabled vendors in the bidding of contracts for food service in state facilities. And we have Director Dwayne Mays here if you have further questions beyond that.
No, I think that helps. And so... follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
So in 16, we can combine that with employment security. And then, in 16, we combined employment security and the business partnership program, and we moved them into employment and training services. And in a sense, it probably makes sense at that move. But now we're moving employment and training services, $10 million into the commissioner and admin services. And my concern is, are we getting away from the intent of the program? Do we want to get away from it? I mean, that's kind of, if we move that money around in different accounts and different budgets, are we eliminating them programs, or what's happening with that? Is
we have an individual that's skilled in answering that question in the audience, and I'd like to invite Bill Endicott forward, if I may. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Endicott, if you could put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Bill Endicott, Division Operations Manager, Department of Labor and Workforce Development. To clarify the question and the response, believe Deputy Commissioner was addressing the Business Enterprise Program, which is administered under Director Mays in the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation. However, going back to a division merger that occurred in state fiscal year 16, there was a separate division previously identified as Business Partnerships. So very similar names, right?
Right. Okay.
They were consolidated into the Employment Security Division, and it was renamed the Division of Employment and Training Services. Part of that was, again, looking at efficiencies. Off the top of my head, Representative, not through the chair, I think there was $600,000 in savings in that year through this division merger. They were able to consolidate some of the leadership positions. And it was a relatively small division. I want to say about 23 PCNs that were moved into a division that was in excess of closer to 400. And it also allowed them to provide for streamlining of efficiencies. The business partnership's primary purpose was to confer with the Alaska Workforce Investment Board and provide for priority programs for federal dollars received. So they were the entity within the department that would receive the federal money, but then Employment Security, now Division of Employment Training Services, would use the money to do the training. And so that's the history. Did I answer your question?
You did. But so now we're moving Employment and Training Services into the Commissioner and Admin Services budget this year, about $10 million of that. So I think my underlying question is, do we get away from the business partnership programs? Do we no longer implement them, use them, or are we downsizing them as this money moves around into different departments and different administrators? I'm wondering what happens to the original function of the programs.
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, it's my understanding that the leadership's approach is to, again, provide for streamlined services. So under the Office of the Commissioner is the component of the Alaska Workforce Investment Board. They, again, provide for priority identification of priority training services. The part of the workforce development component in Employment and Training Services, called their Grants Unit, was specifically moved into the Alaska Workforce Investment Board to streamline the decision making with the actual grant delivery process. So it's designed to, again, provide for the efficiencies of reducing the overall coordination and collaboration of activities within the same department. So now the decision making and administration can take place at the same place.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions of the committee? Representative Ortiz?
Not a question, but just a comment. Mr. Chairman, I had the good fortune of working with the department through, I think you were the Les liaison at that point, but I had a couple of constituents over the summer that had some issues that needed to be worked out, and it was really very heartening to be able to pick up the phone and work with now Deputy Commissioner Munoz. She was able to get right to the issue and solve the issue for the two constituents, and did so in a very, very efficient and cooperative manner, and I just wanted to commend you for that and say thank you for that.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Ms. Munoz not only understands the service side, but also the finance side. She used to sit either there or in Representative Josephson or a Wool seat, I believe. So with that, any further questions, comments? Seeing none, thank you very much for your presentation. And we will now move over to the Natural Resources Budget Overview. I would like to invite up Brent Goodrum, the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Natural Resources, and Raquel Solomon Gross, the Administrative Services Director. And just so members know, Commissioner Corey Feige is online to answer questions as well. Commissioner, are you there?
I am. Good afternoon, Chairman.
Great. Thank you for joining us, and feel free to jump in at any time there. And maybe if we could start with the commissioner, just putting yourself on the record as well as the two folks that we have at the table here. Commissioner?
Good afternoon. My name is Corey Feige. I'm commissioner of the Alaska Department of Natural Resources.
And in the room here, good afternoon. My name is Brent Goodrum, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Natural Resources.
My name is Raquel Solomon Gross, Administrative Services Director for DNR. And I believe we also have Deputy Commissioner Sarah Longan online as well.
Deputy Commissioner, are you there?
Yes, good afternoon. For the record, Sarah Longan, Deputy Commissioner.
Great, thank you very much. And with that, if somebody would like to start it off there.
Good afternoon, Chair Foster, committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to present today. Today we'll be presenting an overview of the department and the FY21 governor budget. But before we start, Commissioner Feige has a few opening comments.
Thank you, and good afternoon again, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. On the record, this is Corey Feige, Commissioner of DNR. We would like to thank you very much for taking the time to allow us to present DNR's Fiscal 21 Governor's Operating Budget, and I thank you very much for accommodating the mix of both in-room and teleconference testimony. I know we're short on time, so we're going to move along rather expeditiously. As you all know, the mission of DNR is to develop, conserve, and maximize the use of Alaska's natural resources consistent with the public interest. With that in mind, DNR worked very hard this year to develop an operating budget that focuses on our statutorily mandated programs, doing those critical pieces of work that remove the roadblocks to the fulfillment of the state's land entitlement, growing the state's economy and revenue streams, and providing high-quality level of service to Alaskans. Over the past year, DNR has strategically deployed resources within the department to better manage areas of growing economic development like aquatic farming, and we've placed a heavy emphasis on doing more with what we have. Finally, we are placing a sharp focus on recruitment and retention within the department to save the state money. Turnover, as you know, costs the state money. And we very much want to improve the quality of both our workforce as well as the outputs from our department. And so with that, I will hand it back over to our ASD, Raquel, to begin the presentation of the budget.
Thank you. For the record, Raquel Solomon Gross. Our plan today is that I will start with some department-level slides, as well as the Division of Support Services, and then I will hand it over to Commissioner Feige and Deputy Commissioners Longan and Goodrum to take you through their respective divisions, addressing the impacts of budgetary actions, as well as what's included in the FY21 governor budget for each of those divisions. And please feel free to ask questions as we go. Before we start, I'd like to mention that DNR has prepared a program guide for the past 4 years. This document is a deeper dive into each of the programs within the department, as well as the budget associated with each of those programs, and we will provide that document to the committee. Okay, our first slide. Our department's mission: develop, conserve, and maximize the use of Alaska's natural resources consistent with the public interest. The Department of Natural Resources generates a large portion of the state's revenue from multiple funding sources, including oil and gas royalties, material sales, mining leases, seismic data sales, park fees, and recording fees, just to name a few. On a 10-year average, the department brings in $28 for every general fund dollar we are appropriated. This is a direct indication of the activity happening across the state. I want to point out that all dollars in this presentation will be represented in thousands. The chart in front of you compares the department's FY19 and FY20 management plan budgets to the FY21 governor budget by each of the four fund categories, with the corresponding dollar amount shown at the bottom. Those categories are unrestricted general funds, designated general funds, other, and federal. Comparing the FY19 management plan and the FY21 governor budget, there's an overall increase of less than 1%. Going to slide 3, our total FY21 general fund budget of just over $101 million, which includes both unrestricted and designated general funds, is 62% of our total budget. This number is important because every reduction we have equates to people and our capacity to do work. DNR's operating budget is funded with 20 different fund sources. I'll go through a few of them. I won't go through all of them. I'm just going to name a few of the larger ones. So in the DGF, or designated general fund category, program General fund program receipts make up the largest portion of this category. Some examples are park fees, material sales, mining leases, recording fees, and seismic data sales. With a few exceptions, all designated general fund revenue collected above what we are appropriated and spent goes back into the general fund. The exceptions to that would be divisions that have carry forward language in the budget bill. For example, with that additional language in the bill, the Division of Parks is able to carry forward what's been collected in previous years above what they are appropriated to spend in order to fill that general fund program receipt bucket in future years to get them through those slower generating revenue years. An example of when this is needed is in a high fire season. Certain park areas may need to be closed to the public, therefore bringing in less revenue. We also have state land disposal income fund, which is revenue from state land sales. We have vehicle rental tax, which is a 10% fee on passenger vehicle rentals, and it's used for tourism, marketing, and development. And we also have timber receipts, which is the sale of timber on state lands. Moving down to the other category, a large portion of this category is statutory designated program receipts, or SDPR. This revenue comes from memorandum of agreements we have with non-governmental agencies. For example, our Office of Project Management and Permitting is largely funded with SDPR and have agreements to coordinate permitting activities across the state. Moving to the next slide. Here we have listed in priority order our DNR's four core services for each of the four fund categories. Those four areas are fostering responsible commercial development, mitigate threat to the public from natural hazards, provide access to state lands for public and private use, and ensure sufficient data acquisition and assessment. If we go back up to the mitigate threat area, I just wanted to highlight that of the $50.2 million, $46.8 of that is dedicated to fire, so the significant part of that is for fire. The second column from the right shows the percentage of general funds allocated to each core service, and that includes both unrestricted and designated general funds. Next slide. This slide compares the FY20 management plan budget to the FY21 governor budget. The biggest change you'll notice here is the net decrease in unrestricted general funds of $4,226,000. The FY21 amount is reduced by the balance of a multi-year operating appropriation DNR received in FY17 for Arctic Strategic Transportation and Resources, also referred to as ASTAR. This operating appropriation terminates at the end of FY20. Also included in the FY21 governor budget are increment requests for each division to offset the increased costs related to union salary increases and health insurance costs. The total increment for the department is $415,000. Those increments are allocated by fund source based on how positions are currently funded. For example, if a position is 100% federally funded, the department is allocated only federal funds for those increased costs associated with that position. As we go through each division, we'll speak to the other changes included in the FY21 governor budget. Over to the right of the slide, we have the comparison of positions between FY20 management plan and the FY21 governor budget. Since FY2016, DNR has reduced our workforce by 104 permanent full-time positions. Between FY20 and FY21, there is a net increase of three positions. You'll notice that there is a negative 14 non-perm positions and a positive 14 permanent part-time positions. This is due to a couple of requests in the FY21 governor budget to replace non-perm positions with permanent seasonal positions in order to support a more sustainable workforce. Slide 6. For some additional detail, this next slide shows us the same position information, but it breaks it out by division. We'll address more of this information in the division-specific slides. Slide 7. The first division slide we have is the Division of Support Services, our mission. provide client-focused, efficient, and cost-effective financial, budget, procurement, human resource, information technology, and recording services to the Department of Natural Resources and the public. The information resource management section used to include IT staff for the department before IT was centralized statewide, and those positions were transferred to the Department of Administration to the Office of Information Technology. This section is now made up of our Geographic Information Systems, or GIS, unit. The division is what would normally be referred to as the Division of Administrative Services in other state agencies, but DNR is also responsible for the statewide recorder's office, which no other agency has, which is why in years past the name was changed to Support Services. Much of the change you see here between 20 and 21 is for those salary and health insurance increase costs that I referred to earlier, and for this division specifically, it was about $20,000 in total. That net decrease in the other fund category is in part due to a transfer or a repurposing of excess interagency receipt authority that was transferred to the Public Information Center, or we refer to that as the PIC. The PIC is in part funded by other DNR divisions, so as their need for additional staff is increased, this transfer will provide them the mechanism to collect and spend those from other DNR divisions. Next, Commissioner Feige will give an overview of the Commissioner's Office.
And thank you, Raquel. And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, back on the record, this is Corey Feige, DNR Commissioner. As you look at slide 8 and the operating budget proposal for the Commissioner's Office, the biggest change you will note there is the closeout of the Arctic Strategic Transport and Resources, Transportation and Resources Project, or the ASTAR project. Within the Commissioner's Office, we have three really central areas of focus at the present time. First of all, and certainly I think one of our more important, is that focus on due process and ensuring due process to the Alaskans and the insurance that we are as a department carrying out our statutorily mandated programs. Under the focus on due process, that's doing things like ensuring that we are processing administrative appeals that come in associated with the leases or the permits or the other transactions that the department undertakes. When we began in January of 2019, we inherited a backlog of 155 administrative appeals, and in the past year have adjudicated 52 of those in the backlog. And at present, because this is an ongoing thing, we have currently a log of about 115 active appeals in the Commissioner's Office. So that takes a large portion of our staff time. We also focus on actively promoting, as you know, Alaska's resources and resource development to both domestic and international investors. This is carrying that message that Alaska is open for business and really sharing with the industries interested in and active in resource development exactly what Alaska's resource development is, the unique characteristics of this place, and most importantly, dispelling the myths about what it is to work and operate in Alaska. And that takes a significant amount of staff time as well. And then finally, we continue to focus a lot of the Commissioner's Office staff and time on working those federal land planning and management issues that impact Alaska literally at the ground level. We work very closely with our DC delegation, doing things like currently aligning revisions to the state's geothermal development program with new proposed federal legislation that's being advanced by Senator Murkowski. We also place a great deal of emphasis on issues of navigability and taking title to state submerged lands, and then also lifting PLOs that have been in long existence and need to be lifted so that the state has access to lands and resources that are due us through the statehood entitlement. And with that, I'll hand over to Deputy Commissioner Longan to present on the Office of Project Management and Permitting.
Thank you. And back on the record, this is Sarah Longan, Deputy Commissioner of DNR.
I will start by providing an overview of the Office of Project Management and Permitting, which is on slide 9. The mission of the office is to coordinate multi-agency regulatory reviews and authorizations while collaboratively engaging federal agencies on land use planning and policy initiatives. The biggest change from prior fiscal year is less than a 10% increase in UGF funding. And this consists of a request to add $595 to compensate or to provide support for federal plan review and coordination. As mentioned, this office dedicates important time and effort closely working with the federal government, advancing and protecting states' interests during federal land planning and initiative reviews. You'll see that the number of positions from prior year remains unchanged. Moving to slide 10 and an overview for the Division of Geological and Geophysical Survey. The mission of this division is to determine the potential of Alaska land for the production of metals, minerals, fuels, and geothermal resources, helping to locate and supply groundwater and construction material and the potential geologic hazards to buildings, roads, bridges, and other installations. There is a very minor change in the budget from prior years, but there are differences in the number of positions. For example, there is a proposal to replace six non-permanent positions, to permanent seasonal in support of critical projects, and this is to help achieve sustainability and retention of our workforce. Changing a part-time position to a seasonal full-time position to meet increased workload, and adding two natural resource technicians for the multispectral scanning project. This project is critical to help leverage the Geological Materials Center, energy and mineral core and rock collection. Scanning of this collection will electronically archive the materials and will preserve the value before those materials degrade. Moving on to slide 11. The Division of Oil and Gas's mission is to manage lands for oil and gas and geothermal exploration and development in a fair and transparent manner to maximize prudent use of resources for the greatest benefit of all Alaskans, in addition to facilitating the safe and environmentally conscious operation and maintenance of common carrier pipelines. There is a negative percent change in the overall budget from prior fiscal years of less than 1%. This was accomplished in part by consolidating the state pipeline section into the Atwood building at a savings of $218. Through this division's gain in operational efficiencies, they were able to transfer two natural resource specialist positions to the Division of Mining, Land, and Water for aquatic farm application and processing. There was also the opportunity to delete one position that's a non-permanent position that was vacant for longer than 12 months. So for all personnel costs, for personnel members, the total change here is a reduction of three positions.
We had a question from Representative Josephson.
Thank you, through the chair. Ms. Longan, the aquatic farm application processing positions, which were formerly under the management plan natural resource specialist, will the farmers, for lack of a better word, will they have to somehow through DGF absorb the cost of those positions? Or is the state just picking up UGF those expenses?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, no, the farmers would not have a cost impact. We were able to gain efficiencies in one division, the Division of Oil and Gas, and transfer those resources to the Division of Mining, Land, and Water for those two natural resource specialist positions to be transferred.
Thank you.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And along the same line of the aquatic, or what I call mariculture, farms, et cetera. Is it a result of an increase in applications, a significant increase in applications, or an expected increase in applications? What prompted that particular change, which I support?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, yes, there has been an increase in the number of applications, and in order for the department and the Division of Mining, Land, and Water to support that, there was the need to accept those two positions from the Division of Oil and Gas, transferring it to the Division of Mining, Land, and Water.
Thank you.
Okay, please continue.
Thank you. And moving on to slide 12 is the Mental Health Trust Land Office. And the mission of this office is to protect and enhance the value of Alaska Mental Health Trust lands, including minerals, coal, oil and gas, timber, and real estate, while maximizing revenues from those lands over time to support mental health services. And as a reminder, the Trust Land Office budget is zero-based, meaning it is backed out every year and starts from scratch. It is approved by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority Board. And in fiscal year 2019, this office generated $10.6 million in revenues from rents, land sales, and royalties. And there's really not much to report here other than a cost savings of $78.9 achieved by gaining internal efficiencies, and the number of positions in the current proposed plan remains the same from prior years. With that, that concludes my overview of the divisions, and I would like to hand it over to Deputy Commissioner Brent Longen to Deputy Commissioner Brent Goodrum to continue the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. For the record, Deputy Commissioner Brent Goodrum. Within the Division of Agriculture, its mission is to promote and encourage development of the agricultural industry in Alaska. Last year, there was considerable discussion of the Division of Agriculture's budget. This year, the proposed budget changes are due primarily to union salary and health insurance cost increases. For the Division of Forestry, its mission is to serve Alaskans through sustainable forest management and wildland fire protection. The 2019 wildfire season was historic, and I first want to just thank the Division of Forestry for their heroic and demanding work this past year. There were 742 fires at approximately 2.6 million acres that burned throughout the state this past year. With regards to the budget proposal, the Forest Inventory and Analysis Program would benefit from the conversion of 8 positions from temporary hires to permanent seasonal staff, and that is all done with federal funds. And additionally, an increase of the designated general fund for timber sale preparation will help deliver more wood to forest product sector, to communities, and to the public. For the Division of Mining, Land, and Water, its mission is to provide for the appropriate use and management of Alaska's state-owned land and water, aiming towards maximum use consistent with the public interest. The governor's budget has provided additional staffing for 2 growing sections within the division. 1 additional staff has been identified to increase the capability of the land sales section in Fairbanks. The governor's budget also is supporting the growing mariculture industry by requesting funding for those 2 previously identified positions from oil and gas to help process the increased number of applications. I know as of this week, they have currently have 34 applications in front of them, and they're still receiving applications this year through April 30th. And so this appropriation would be greatly appreciated and helpful to the program. Lastly, the governor's budget adds language for the potential of carry forward of general fund program receipts. Lastly, the Division of Parks, its mission is to provide outdoor recreation opportunities and conserves and interprets natural, cultural, and historic resources for the use, enjoyment, and welfare of the people. This year is a big year for the state parks as it's celebrating its 50th anniversary. And so there'll be a number of activities throughout the state this year celebrating that milestone. The primary elements that are contained within the budget is an increase in interagency authority to support transparent budgeting of reimbursable service agreements. You can see both for Division of Parks as well as within it, the Office of History and Archaeology are seeing both of those interagency authority increases. The Office of History and Archaeology in 2019 reviewed over 930 projects statewide and signed five major agreements. One other thing to note, the Division of Parks is seeking to also eliminate eight non-perm positions currently on their books. And with that, I believe we are able to answer any questions that the committee may have at this time.
Great, thank you. We've got a question from Representative Josephson.
Yes, through the chair for Commissioner Feige, especially given that that was speedy. Could the commissioner tell us about her feelings about A-STAR's work and whether sort of what it got done, what remains to be done, whether it was worthwhile, just that sort of thing?
And thank you very much for that. Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes. I believe that the A-STAR project has been very successful. We do have ongoing work that will be done over the next, I believe, is 2 to 3 years, but those increments will transfer over to a capital project. A-STAR has been focused on defining, aside from community needs, things like making sure that there's corridors for fiber optics for communication and for developing and enhancing community security and community connectedness. It's also been focused on transportation corridors and availability of gravel and materials and water for doing things like that. The committee may and probably is aware that the North Slope Borough and communities within the North Slope Borough, specifically in NPRA, have for now the last two winter seasons constructed an all-season snow road, or excuse me, an all-winter snow road that allows for road travel between Barrow and I believe Nuiqsuk and possibly Atkasuk to get out to the Dalton Highway. So those folks have now for two winter seasons had vehicle access to Fairbanks. And myself and Deputy Commissioner Longan were with the North Slope Borough leadership in May in Utqiagvik and talked about the impact of having that snow road. And they now have a full transportation plan defined. They would love to see A-STAR develop into a program that helps them define strategic road corridors so that looking to the future, they could go with an all-season road, a gravel road, that would connect those communities and help drive their cost of living down and their community security and connectedness up. So I do believe that the A-STAR program has been very, very important and is going to bear fruit for especially our North Slope communities for a long time to come.
Very thorough answer. Thank you.
Any further questions? Okay. Any further comments, Commissioner?
No, none for me other than just again to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the members of the committee for giving us the flexibility for the rather unique presentation this afternoon. But we hope we provided the information you need, and we're happy to answer any questions or provide additional information as you desire.
Thank you very much. And so with that, our next meeting is scheduled for tomorrow, February 13th at 1:30 p.m., and at that meeting, we will bring back HB 234, which is the governor's FY20 supplemental. We'll have legislative finance will be just coming before us to give their take on it. So with that, if there is nothing else to come before the committee, we will be adjourned at 2:55 p.m. Thank you.